Welcome and thank you for joining us for another episode of KPMG's Inside International Tax, a podcast devoted to recent developments, observations, and trends related to U.S. international tax. I'm one of your hosts, Gary Scanlon, a principal in KPMG's WNT International Tax Practice. I'm joined by my co-host, Kristen Gamboa, a managing director in the same group. Hey, Kristen.
Hey, Gary.
So today we're going to explore the international aspects of the stock buyback excise tax, which was enacted as part of the Inflation Reduction Act in 2022, as well as some procedural requirements related to that tax. In general, the stock buyback tax applies to U.S. publicly traded companies, but under certain circumstances, the U.S. subsidiaries of foreign publicly traded companies could get pulled into its ambit. In particular, foreign pubcos should pay close attention to the so-called funding rule introduced in IRS notice last year and modified in recently issued proposed regulations. For our discussion today, we're joined by Maury Passman, a managing director in KPMG's corporate WNT group, and Tim Nichols, a senior manager in the same group. Welcome, Maury and Tim.
Thank you, Gary, and thank you, Christian. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks for having us.
So before we dive into the details of the new proposed regs, I think it'd be helpful to walk through how we got here. So let's start from the beginning. Tim, generally, what is the stock buyback excise tax?
So first off, stock buyback excise tax is kind of a mouthful. So for everyone's sake, I'm just going to refer to this tax as the excise tax. High level, the excise tax is a non-deductible 1% tax on the fair market value of repurchases of stock by certain publicly traded corporations on or after January 1st of 2023. And by statute, the excise tax applies primarily to repurchases of stock by publicly traded domestic corporations. And I think it's also worth noting that for domestic corporations, the excise tax is generally imposed only on the excess of the value of the shares repurchased minus the value of shares issued in a tax year. And so in other words, although there are a bunch of special rules and exceptions, a domestic corporation generally takes the value of all of the shares it repurchases in a year and subtracts from that the value of all of the shares that it issues in that tax year, and the excise tax is only imposed on the difference between the two.
You mentioned that the statute applies primarily to publicly traded domestic corporations, but as Gary noted in the intro, sometimes U.S. subs of foreign pubcos can be subject to the excise tax. Tim, when can that happen?
So the statute does provide two rules under which purchases of stock of foreign publicly traded corporations or foreign pubcos can be subject to the excise tax. First, the statute applies the excise tax to purchases by certain U.S. affiliates or U.S. specified affiliates in the language of the statute, purchases by those U.S. specified affiliates of the stock of their foreign pubco parent. And the statute defines the term specified affiliate as any corporation or partnership if more than 50% of the stock by voter value or interests, capital or profits of a partnership, if more than 50% is owned by a second corporation.
And in the context of a foreign parented group, the statute provides that if the stock of that foreign pubco is purchased by a specified affiliate of the foreign pubco that is either a U.S. corporation or partnership, or a foreign partnership with a direct or indirect partner that is a U.S. entity, the excise tax applies.
And in the context of a foreign parented group, the statute provides that if the stock of that foreign pubco is purchased by a specified affiliate of the foreign pubco that is either a U.S. corporation or partnership, or a foreign corporation with an indirect partner that is a U.S. entity, the excise tax applies. Second, the statute provides that if a foreign corporation became a surrogate foreign corporation after September 20th, 2021, the surrogate foreign corporation is subject to the excise tax, somewhat similarly to any other domestic corporation. Now, this is a fairly uncommon fact pattern, and therefore, I don't think we're going to spend any time on this second rule in this discussion. However, I do think it's worth noting that even the first rule mentioned would have a fairly limited effect on foreign parented groups. As a practical matter, it is simply not that common for U.S. or any other subsidiaries of a foreign corporation to purchase the stock of that foreign corporation, at least outside of certain stock-based compensation arrangements. Rather, if a foreign publicly traded corporation wants to purchase its stock, the natural party to purchase that stock is the foreign pubco itself. So while the statute clearly applies to purchases of stock of a foreign pubco by its U.S. specified affiliates, in practice, that is simply not a very common transaction.
Thanks. So are there any other rules under the statute worth mentioning before moving along?
I think it's worth noting that the netting rule for offsetting repurchases and issuances is much more limited in the context of a foreign pubco. While there are certain exceptions and special rules, as I noted before, domestic corporations generally can offset or net issuances against repurchases in the same tax year for purposes of the excise tax. However, if a U.S. specified affiliate purchases stock of its foreign pubco parent, the statute provides that only stock of the foreign parent that is issued or provided to employees of the specified affiliate can be netted against that purchase. So this netting rule is much more limited in the context of a foreign parented group, although under the statute, the application of the excise tax in a foreign parented group context is also much more limited.
Is there any other guidance on the excise tax for foreign parented groups before the proposed regs were issued?
Yes, the Treasury Department released a notice, Notice 2023-2, in late December of 2022, providing interim guidance on the application and scope of the excise tax. This notice addressed many aspects of the excise tax. I think what most surprised practitioners was the inclusion of what is often called the funding rule, which seemingly would greatly expand the application of the excise tax to foreign pubcos.
So what exactly did this funding rule provide?
So the notice provided that in addition to a situation where a U.S. specified affiliate acquires stock of its foreign pubco parent, the excise tax would also apply if the foreign pubco or a non-U.S. affiliate of that foreign pubco acquired stock of the foreign pubco and that acquisition was funded by any means, including through distributions, debt, or capital contributions, by a U.S. specified affiliate with a principal purpose to avoid the excise tax. On its own, this seemed to contemplate a situation where a U.S. affiliate planned to buy stock of the foreign parent, but because of the excise tax, the U.S. affiliate decided to fund a foreign entity to do the purchase instead. And in and of itself, this rule also seemed likely to have limited reach, because as I noted before, it's simply not very common, at least in my experience, for a U.S. subsidiary of a foreign publicly traded corporation to want to purchase stock of that foreign parent. However, the notice also provided another rule, sometimes referred to as the per se rule, which generally would provide that if the U.S. affiliate funded, by any means other than a distribution, its foreign parent or another related foreign entity, and the foreign parent or other foreign entity purchased foreign parent stock within 2 years before or after the funding, a principal purpose of avoiding the excise tax would be deemed to exist. And so this would mean that if, say, a U.S. subsidiary loaned money to its foreign parent, and a year and a half later, the foreign parent did a buyback of its own shares on the public market, the excise tax would seemingly apply to the U.S. subsidiary to the extent of its funding, even though there was never any intent or thought for the U.S. subsidiary to acquire shares of the foreign parent itself.
Thanks, Tim. Mari, how did the tax community, advisors, and taxpayers react to the notice's funding rule?
Well, Kirsten, it was definitely controversial. Many folks in the tax community view the funding rule as quite a significant departure from the statutory language. You might even call it an overreach, to use somewhat diplomatic terminology. In the statute, Congress had enacted a rule that applies to a U.S. subsidiary's purchase of its foreign parent's stock from an unrelated seller, and the notice takes this and sought to expand this to the acquisition of the stock by the foreign parent or by the foreign subsidiaries of the foreign parent to the extent the repurchase was found to have been funded directly or indirectly by any means by the U.S. subsidiary for the purpose of avoiding the excise tax. with this expansive per se rule that Tim had mentioned that deems a bad purchase for most fundings within 2 years of the repurchase. And part of the problem here is the funding rule and the per se rule are vague, that has potentially broad application with little to no exceptions. For example, there are no exceptions for ordinary course transactions, no exceptions for short-term funding arrangements or for routine cash pooling. In addition, the implementation of these rules would also clearly involve significant complexity for a starting fact pattern, the acquisition of foreign parented stock by a U.S. subsidiary, which we understand is a rare thing outside of the context of stock-based compensation arrangements. And it may even be improper under local corporate laws or securities laws of many countries.
Thanks, Maury. Obviously, the 2023 notice is old news. Tim, why are we even talking about the excise tax on this podcast, other than for the obvious reason that I just love chatting with you and Maury?
On April 9th, the government released proposed regulations regarding the excise tax. And I'd say that outside the context of the funding rule issues we're going to discuss, I think the proposed regulations were, for the most part, what practitioners were expecting. The proposed regulations largely follow what was telegraphed in the notice in terms of just the main operating rules of the regime, such as what counts as a repurchase or redemption, how stock is valued for excise tax purposes, and also in terms of the procedural aspects of how the excise tax will be reported and when it needs to be paid. However, what most practitioners in this space were curious to see in the proposed regulations was what, if any, changes would be made to the funding rule that was set forth in the notice. And indeed, on panels, Treasury and IRS officials had been hinting that there would be significant changes to the funding rule and that practitioners would be mostly pleased with those changes.
Okay, that suspense is killing me, Tim. Were people pleased?
I think mostly no. The proposed regulations do get rid of that 2 year per se rule that had been included in the notice. However, the proposed regulations do provide, similar to the notice, that if a U.S. subsidiary funds a purchase of the stock of its foreign parent by that foreign parent or another foreign subsidiary with a principal purpose of avoiding the excise tax, the U.S. subsidiary can be subject to the excise tax to the extent of that funding. Further, and unlike the notice, the proposed regulations provide that if, based on all the facts and circumstances, a principal purpose of a funding by a U.S. subsidiary is to fund, directly or indirectly, a purchase of foreign parent stock, then there is a principal purpose of avoiding the excise tax.
Maury, do these changes alleviate any of your concerns with the notice's funding rule?
Gary, they don't. There's a basic policy decision that Treasury seems to have made that the excise should be imposed on a U.S. subsidiary to the extent that its foreign parent buys back its stock with funds that are indirectly supplied by the U.S. subsidiary. And that basic policy decision seems to remain firmly in place in the proposed regulations. In addition, the new funding rules under the proposed regulations seem, in certain respects, to be broader than the funding rule in the notice in conjunction with the per se rule. For example, the new purpose standard changes what the purpose is. It looks to a purpose of simply funding a repurchase, so it directly or indirectly funding the parent's repurchase, as opposed to a purpose of avoiding the tax itself. So it seems to be an alternative version of the per se rule focused on a slightly different purpose, the funding aspect. The notice's per se rule is limited to 2 years, presumably 2 years before and after a covered repurchase. The new purpose rule in the proposed regulations is not time limited. And in fact, there's an example of a funding in the proposed regulations that is more than 2 years prior to a covered repurchase, where the example says that the tax is imposed on that funding. The per se rule in the notice carved out distributions, an explicit parenthetical except for distributions language, but the new funding and principal purpose rules in the proposed regulations do not have this carve out. So distributions are now potentially subject to the funding rule if they're undertaken with a principal purpose of funding, directly or indirectly, the purchase of stock. And there's an example in the proposed regs that shows that. Additionally, the new funding rule in the proposed regulations itself has been updated with broader language. The funding rule in the notice applied to situations where the U.S. company funds by any means whereas the new funding rule applies to, with respect to language, funds by any means, directly or indirectly. Now, it's not clear what the scope of an indirect funding is, but it seems to be an expansion of, or at least an intention of expanding the scope of the funding rule.
Tim, are there any exclusions or guardrails added to the funding rule?
The short answer is no.
Interestingly, there was a press release by the Treasury stating that ordinary course intercompany funding transactions would not be captured by the proposed regulations.
However, the proposed regulations themselves do not provide any exception for certain types of funding. Rather, the proposed regulations talk about funding, quote, by any means, directly or indirectly, which seemingly could encompass ordinary course transactions like arm's length intercompany payments for inventory, IP, corporate functions, etc. Just to highlight one example here, there is no exception in the proposed regulations for cash pooling arrangements for foreign parented groups. In many cases, these cash pooling arrangements are entered into for efficient cash management purposes, not with a purpose of funding any particular activity. However, if the cash pool header is with the foreign parent, and the foreign parent uses the cash in the account to buy back its shares, can that be caught by this new rule? In part, I think this goes to the question of whose purpose is relevant. Is it the U.S. sub? Is it the foreign parent? Is it both?
These are obviously just proposed regs. Maury, any hope that Treasury and the IRS will change course, maybe significantly limit the funding rule in the final regs, or maybe even eliminate it?
There's always hope, right? But this remains to be seen. The Treasury seemingly has adopted an expansive view of the excise as applied to U.S. subsidiaries of foreign pubcos as a policy matter, and my expectation is that they are not going to want to retreat from this call. At the same time, I anticipate Treasury will be receiving quite pointed comments and criticism of the funding rule in the proposed regulations, both from bar associations as well as from trade associations and lobbyists, and we'll see how they respond. If Treasury does decide to retain the thrust of the funding rule, I would certainly hope that guidance will be provided to limit the scope of the funding rule to make it less unmanageable. For example, guidance could provide a safe harbor for ordinary course transactions, short-term funding arrangements, and cash management activities such as pooling arrangements, perhaps something in line with what they had done in the context of the Section 385 regulations with respect to a similar funding rule.
Do the proposed regulations provide any additional updates relevant to the funding rule, Tim?
The proposed regulations also provide a set of rules regarding a rebuttable presumption for fundings to certain downstream subsidiaries of a U.S. specified affiliate. And these rules seem similar to a proposal that was in the administration's 2025 Green Book, which proposed to explicitly extend the application of the excise tax to the acquisition of stock of a foreign pubco by a specified affiliate of that foreign pubco, that is a CFC. Now, personally, I think this downstream funding rule is unlikely to have much relevance. The fact pattern it involves, in which a foreign parent has a U.S. subsidiary and the U.S. subsidiary owns a CFC, and then the CFC purchases stock of the foreign parent, that's simply not a transaction that I've seen come up in my practice.
So while the government can point to this downstream funding rule and say that the per se rule in the notice has been replaced with a rebuttable presumption, I think the much more significant aspect of the proposed regulations is the definition of what constitutes a principal purpose of avoiding the excise tax, which we've already been discussing.
Thanks, Tim. So moving from the technical rules in the regs to the more practical rules of actually paying the excise tax, the proposed regs provide guidance on both the filing and the payment for this tax. Maury, what exactly was provided?
Excellent question. So the proposed regulations actually came out in two packages. One package was the by far larger one dealing with the substantive rules, and there was a smaller package that are procedural rules. So the first thing I want to emphasize, though, is that these rules are proposed regulations. They're not yet final. And as we sit here today, there is no due date to file the tax or pay the tax. This is all expected to be done after final regulations are imposed. So first, any corporation that's a covered corporation, the U.S. publicly traded parent, or a person that is treated as a covered corporation, that's the U.S. controlled subsidiary of a foreign parent that makes a stock repurchase or is treated as making a stock repurchase after December 31, 2022, is going to be required to file a stock repurchase excise tax return. And there's no de minimis exception for the filing. So if a company buys back or is treated as buying back even a single share of stock, even if it's fully offset or covered by the de minimis exception under the statute, the filing is still going to be required. So even if there's no tax liability, you still have to have the filings. The filing itself is going to be on an excise tax return, the Form 720 quarterly federal excise tax return. And it has to have attached the Form 7208, the excise tax on repurchase of corporate stock. That needs to be attached to the Form 720. The return is due in general with the due date for the Form 720 for the first full calendar quarter after the end of the taxable year. So if regulations are issued as final sometime during this year for a calendar year 2024 taxpayer, we would expect the filing due date would be for the first full calendar quarter after the end of the year, which would be January, February, March of 2025. That would be an April 30, 2025 filing date. With respect to taxable years that have ended or that do end prior to the publication of the final regulations in the Federal Register, the due dates for those return will be for the first full calendar quarter after the regulations are published as final. So the example in the proposed regulations is if the final regulations are published in September 16th of 24, the returns for all tax years ending prior to that time would be due, you'd look at the first full calendar quarter after that, October, November, December of 24, and the due date for the 720 for that quarter would be January 31 of 2025. And payment is due at the time that the return is due. So there's no extension of that. Payment is due, same as the filing date.
That's helpful. So, Maury, any predictions on when we might see final regs?
I have made a number of predictions for when I thought the proposed regs would come out, and I was wrong every time. What we do see is that comments are due for the proposed procedural package by May 13th and for the substantive package by June 11th, which suggests that they're on two different time tracks and that the government is going to prioritize getting the procedural regs finalized. Again, the examples in the procedural regulations posit that final regulations would be issued on September 16th of 2024. Whether that happens or not, we'll see, but that's what is in the examples in the proposed regulations. In terms of the substantive package, we have a comment period that's open through June 11th, and we certainly anticipate there will be a number of significant comments with respect to the funding rule and other aspects of the substantive rules in the package. So that presumably will take some time longer than this, but I'm not sure when regulations ultimately would come out. One other point to keep in mind is in about a week or so, we'll have the ABA, the American Bar Association's annual May meeting. That'll happen May 2, May 3, May 4. That is a time where a number of Treasury and IRS representatives will be on the various panels, and they will no doubt be asked their views and to provide comments and respond to questions on these rules. And it'll be interesting to see what takeaways we get from that. Otherwise, we're in a situation of waiting for final regulations to be issued, and we'll just see what Treasury decides and when they're able to actually publish something.
So we need to wrap this episode up. Maury, do you have any final thoughts?
A couple of high-level thoughts. First of all, we should be grateful that it's a 1% tax and not a higher tax. 1% may not seem like much, but it certainly could have significant future ramifications. And there is that legislative proposal that came out of the Biden administration to raise it up to 4%. We've also seen a couple of other countries be influenced, I guess, by this tax, and they're considering their own proposals. We've seen that in Canada. I understand that Trudeau will propose one of these stock buyback taxes, which conceivably could apply to the foreign subsidiaries of U.S. companies. And similarly, I saw that Bloomberg reported a day or two ago that this may be part of the French 2025 budget proposal as well. So there could be further legislative developments both in this country and in other countries. At the same time, it's quite possible that taxpayers may choose to try to challenge aspects of this tax, including a funding rule. And we'll just have to see what develops there and how things will ultimately shake out.
Thank you, Mari and Tim, for joining us today to discuss these recent developments for the stock buyback excise tax. And a special thanks to Stephen Haltham for his help on this episode. These new proposed regs seem to provide a little more clarity of what the application and administration of this excise tax will look like, but we'll be on the lookout for the next developments for this excise tax, presumably with the publication of final regulations. As always, please stay tuned for future episodes of KPMG's Inside International Tax to stay up to speed on the latest developments in U.S. international tax. Until our next episode, take care. We'll be right back.